Okay, so last week we saw the long Perek Chaf of David and Yehonasan. And this week we're going to start what really is, it's a two-part story. And it's the disaster of Shaul and the massacre of Nov Yir HaKohen. I think the shiur will probably be a little bit shorter this week. It's a shorter Perek. But already we're going to have to go a little bit out of order because I want to set up one question from the Radak as an introduction, as something for us to have in our minds as we begin the story. Right, the story is to in Perek Chaf Aleph, that's going to be the Perek where David shows up at the Mishkan in Nov, and then Perek Chaf Beis is going to be the Perek where Shaul destroys Nov. So we'll talk about Shaul's Avera next week. But ready, before we begin, we need to just put one excellent question on the table. So let's go to the source sheet and take a look. There are Doc, right? This is Parakuf Beis. So what does he say? It says, Yesh litmoa b'chol asher izkir akasim. It says, there's one huge question we have to ask when we talk about this whole parasha. Whenever the Torah and the Navi talks about Shaul's sins, b'chol asher izkir akasim avonu Shaul, lo ra'inu shehizkir avon nov yir hakohanim. Tanakh never mentions the destruction of the city of Nov as one of Shaul's sins. Let's take a look. Look at source number two, source number three. Radak's not wrong. Two times in Tanakh, we're told why Shaul loses the kingship. One is going to be in Perek Kavches, right before Shaul is going to die. He's going to go to the woman at Ein Dor. They're going to bring Shmuel back from the dead. And what Shmuel's message is going to be that you're going to die. And Shmuel tells Shaul why. Kasher lo shamata b'kol Hashem. Velo asisa charona po ba'amalek. You didn't listen to the voice of Hashem. If you remember when we did the parak of Amalek, the theme of listening to the voice of Hashem came up again and again. Shaul didn't do it then. And Shmuel says, that's why you are going to, that's where you're going to die. Yeah, question? Now, you want to jump in?
Yeah, last week we talked about this idea of people in the context of Shaul and Esther and Zipporah and Shmuel. So is it possible that it's this idea of atoning and correcting? No, it's something that's going to come up later. It's next to the Shaul.
I'm having trouble hearing. There's a lot of wrestling.
There's going to be some sort of reckoning.
Can you say the idea again? There's a lot of wrestling in the background.
Right. So in we talked in recent weeks about people in history correcting past mistakes, like in the Gilat Rut and Korach and Shmuel. Mm-hmm. So is it possible that this sin of Nov is being shelved to the future? Where we have in Yeshayahu Od Hayom B'Nov that there's some sort of future reckoning?
Could be. Look, I mean, I would say that's getting into fancy answer territory. So could be. Could be. It's a good answer, if we got to break out our Yeshayahu in the future, why isn't Shmuel mentioning Shaul, you're going to die because you massacred a city full of priests and you destroyed a Mishkan. I don't know. I think the bottom line.
Okay, I guess was speculating.
It's not something I've researched. Yeah, no, totally good. I would think that should be on the list.
Okay.
Very
good. Thank you.
All good. Great. So that's one pasuk. Divra Hayamim gives an additional aveira. Source number three. Vayama Shal b'mal Hashem mal b'Hashem. He betrayed the Ribbono Shel Olam. Al Dvar Hashem Asher lo shamar. He didn't observe what Hashem had said. That's referring to the issue of Amalek, right? He did listen to Hashem's commandment. That's not about Amalek. Began Lishol Be'ov Lidrosh. And then Shaul also is being punished because he went to ask the Ashes Oath, which Shmuel probably doesn't mention because that's the moment where this is happening, right? The Rayam says, you know, after the fact, there are two chataim that are being highlighted. One is Amalek and two is him going to the woman, the Baal Asof. Where is Nov Yir HaKohanim? It should be there. How many times was a Mishkan destroyed in Jewish history? And who's destroyed Mishkan or Beis HaMikdash? We have Bavel, we have the Plishtim we saw with Shiloh. We have the Babylonians, we have the Romans, and we have Shaul. Right, those are the four groups who destroy a Mishkan or a Beis HaMikdash in Jewish history. One of those four does not belong. Plishtim are bad, Bavel is bad, Romans are bad. If Shaul is on the list, then his Aveira should appear in here. Asks the Radak, why isn't it here? Why doesn't it show up? And he says even worse. You go through, or not even worse, but also problematic, go through more of the Sefer, v'afilu kishakar beis hadamim. When Shaul later on in the Sefer, his house is going to be referred to a house of bloodshed. So I would have thought, okay, what's the murder that stands out for Shaul? It's murdering the city of Kohanim. But no. Lo amar ela al asher himis es ha-givonim. The pasuk refers to the people from Givon that Shaul killed in the course of wiping out the city of Novi Arkohanim, below Amar Arkohanim, and does not highlight, the pasuk never highlights Shmuel Shaul killing the Kohanim, the priests of Novi. Why doesn't it appear? So next week we'll talk about what Shaul's Aveira, get into the depths of the Aveira. But what the Radak is putting on the table for us now is to realize that before we begin the story, we need to be looking at the other factors that are happening here, right? For all that happens with Shaul, we need to appreciate there are reasons, and to some degree, understandable reasons. Not justifiable reasons, but understandable reasons why Shaul is going to do what he's going to do. There are going to be mitigating factors. We're going to need to look at them. Chazal already going to be doing this. We need to see what else is happening in the picture that makes it more complicated than just the story of crazy Malach Shaul massacring a city of totally innocent Kohanim for no reason. We're going to need to figure that out, because if that's the story, just black and white, Shaul massacring innocents, then this has to be like front and center on the list. I mean, even Amalek, we talk about Shaul, my gosh, Shaul didn't wipe out Amalek. He left a few people alive. And we explain what the problem was with that. But like mass murder should be front on the list. I mean, we think of Ahav and Navos and Eliyahu, right? Where Ahav murders one innocent person to get his vineyard. And Eliyahu goes nuts, right? Eliyahu goes ballistic. You're going to die. The dogs are going to lick your blood. I mean, right, graphic detail what's going to happen to Ahav. For all the Averas that Ahav had, the Avodah Zarah and the corruption, it was one murder. That was the end of Ahav. That was over the cliff. A king killing innocent people, totally unacceptable. Shaul wipes out 85 Kohanim, destroys a Mishkan, not a peep from the Navi. That's not highlighted, one of his sins. There has to be more going on. So the Radak begins to give the answer. We're going to have to unpack this. The Radak says at the beginning, Nireki chayavim hayu ha-kohanim. It must be that there was guilt that these Kohanim had. They were not totally innocent. V'lo nigle bekasuv avonam, zulasi avon beiseli. So he suggests, if we go back to the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, when we were first introduced to the Kohanim we were introduced to were Chafni and Pinchas Eli's sons, who were a total disaster. They were stealing meat. They were committing adultery. We would like to assume that after Eli was killed and his sons, Eli died and his sons were killed and the Mishkan of Shiloh was destroyed, we would like to imagine that Eli's house began to shape up. So the Radak suggests, well, maybe there were some very severe off the books of Eros. Could be. It's going to be difficult because we'll meet the Kohen. Kohen doesn't seem like a bad guy, the Kohen Gadol right now. So difficult to imagine that like literally the exact same behavior from Beis Eli is still happening now. Just the Navi's not putting it on the record. The Radak says Yafa Pichin Nena Shaul Al Dama. I don't think that Shaul gets off scot free. Shaul is punished for this. Shanafa Becherev Plishtim Hu Ubanah. So Radak suggests like a very interesting compromise. He thinks it's not a coincidence that Shaul is killed in battle. Think about it. What punishment has Shaul been told until now? We've seen twice Shmuel tell Shaul, because of what you did, you are going to lose the kingship. But I think as we've discussed, losing the kingship could happen in many, many different ways. One way in which Shaul could lose the kingship, probably the way that that really we were hoping for, would be David marries into the family. Yehonasan says David should be king. Shaul says, Baruch Hashem, I have a very popular son-in-law and general, David. He is going to succeed me as king. And then that would have been it. Shaul, until now, has never been told that he's going to die. And he's going to die violently. So the Radak suggests that Shaul's death is not because of Amalek, but he's going to die because he's going to be killed in battle because of wiping out Noah Birkan. Okay, could be. Even though it seems like Shmuel is highlighting Amalek over here when he says, tomorrow you will die because you didn't listen to me with Amalek. So there's some difficulty with that suggestion. But the bottom line to take out of Radak, the idea that the Navi is not placing this Aveira as front and center as we would think it should. And that means that we need to approach the whole story from the get-go with more sensitivity and suspicion and looking carefully at everyone involved really jumps out. Okay. So with that said, let's begin to tackle the parak. The parak's only, I think, 15 psukim, so we should be able to get through it pretty easily. Parak begins after the meeting with David and Yehonasan. We remember they meet, and some of the farshim suggested that they were not supposed to meet, but they just couldn't control themselves. They basically risk whatever, come what may. We had done this whole charade of the arrows, but we're just gonna meet in one more time. They weep bitterly. They hug. Finally, David loses control. Remember, his crying was just too much to bear. They agree that the covenant between them is going to last forever, between their descendants. And then the fateful split. David leaves. Yonasan goes home. We talked last week about that moment, that decision for them to part. David comes to Novel. Achimelech HaKohen. The Kohanim have been on break in Sefer Shmuel since the death of Eli. Now we're back with Achimelech, who is, I think, the great-grandson, I believe, of Eli. So he's still, right, base Eli, even though the prophecy in the very beginning of the Sefer was that the house of Eli would lose the Kahuna Gedola. That has not yet happened. It's not going to happen, actually, until much later on. He's still Kohen Gadol. The Yecharad Achimelech likras David. Achimelech trembles at the approach of David. Why are you by yourself and no one is with you? You can see every time Achimelech is going to talk, by the way, pay attention carefully, we'll see there's a lot of unnecessary words that come out of Achimelech's mouth. The way it's an obvious way of communicating, Achimelech is very uncomfortable. He's surprised. He's not confident, right? That's going to come out here. It's going to keep on happening. Why are you by yourself and no one's with you? Redundant. He's trembling. What does it mean? Why is he trembling? We'll probably give a couple of different suggestions. The Radak quotes one that it doesn't mean he was shaking with fear. He suggests, and he quotes a couple of psukim which have this phenomenon. It means that Achimelech rushed out to greet David. We have to remember, we don't really think of who David was at this time. David is the son-in-law of the king. He's not the head of the army. He's not the Sar Tzava, but he is the greatest commander and most successful commander in the army. It would be like General Petraeus from 10 years ago also happened to be the king's son-in-law and suddenly shows up by himself. Like a couple of weeks ago, the defense secretary, Austin, the defense secretary, came to Eretz Yisrael because they were having, meetings. That was right then was the same day. Remember that that Israel sabotaged that Iranian nuclear reactor, right? The defense secretary was there. And he did not show up by himself. Comes the whole big airplane and a whole bunch of advisors and people, because important people come with their crew. So to see David, the king's son-in-law and the leading commander in the army coming by himself is extremely strange. So Radak suggested, right, that the trembling just means he rushed out to greet him. But then the Radak says, you know what? I think the pshat really means something else. No. Read it straight. Right. The way that the 1917 JPS translated it means trembling. Upachad, he's afraid. He's afraid when he sees Devah come by himself. Something is clearly very, very wrong. That this is not a normal occurrence. He senses something is wrong and he's terrified. And that's very important because we have to remember, reading the story, what from Shaul's perspective is Achimelech's behavior going to look like? When in one parak, Shaul is going to declare Achimelech the Kohen Gadol a traitor and have him killed, is that going to be totally unreasonable or a reasonable response? And the first point that the Navi is putting front and center is that Achimelech immediately realizes this is a very suspicious setting. David should not be coming all by himself. Something's very weird. He's speaking in terms and in tones that sound like he's afraid. He's trembling. Something's wrong. What does David say in response? The king commanded me something. Some super secret mission no one can know. I have my soldiers, but I'm going to rendezvous with them in some place. Super sketchy and very difficult to explain. Why is David by himself? And why are his soldiers somewhere else? Classified information, I can't explain it to you. By the way, David is starving. He's no food. What do you have? And you can, by the way, hear David. David has a clear sense of command. We have a leader. Achimelech is like hesitant. David bangs the stuff out. What do you have? Chamisha lechem. You got 5 loaves of bread. Tana biyadi. Give them to me. Oh hanimtza. Right. David is giving off the aura, and it's almost like you can see David's ability to act, even though David is in a moment of crisis and he's all alone. The persona he shows to Achimelech is someone with total confidence, total leadership. I'm on a super secret mission. I can't tell you what it is, and you got to give me bread, right? What is the Kohen Gadol's response? It's difficult exactly to understand. Look at a couple of views of the Mefarshim. Yana Kohen El David by Yomer In Lachem Chol Tachas Yadi. There is no bread that's chol, right? No non-sacred bread. Ki Im Lachem Kodesh Yesh. There is only holy bread. And you can have it as long as the lads, meaning your other soldiers, have not been with any woman. Meaning you need to be pure. When the Kohen Gadol tells David and give it to, as long as the lads have not been with any woman, it's probably a nice way of telling him about David himself. Right? If you and your army are tahor, then I can give you this lechem kodesh. Now, what is this lechem kodesh that Achimelech is proposing to give him? What's going on? So let's read a couple more. So come look at the Mefarshim, we'll see. David says to the Kohen, says, don't worry, we've not been with any woman lately, right? I mean, the man's been by himself in a field for 3 days, starving, that's definitely true. And he says, now everyone's tahor, so you don't have to worry about it. And then the Navi Pasuk Zion explains what bread is over here. So he says, "Vayitin lo haKohen Kodesh." The Kohen gave him holy bread. Ki lo haya sham lachem, ki im lachem hapanim hamusarim milifnei Hashem, lasum lachem chok biyom hilakho. So the Kohen gives David this bread. It sounds like lachem hapanim. It sounds like it's the bread from the shulchan, right, which was given out every week. Now, there's a problem here because Achimelech is focusing on the problem of purity. But if the bread that he's giving to David is the Lechem HaPanim, then there's a second problem. David is not a Kohen, he's a Yisrael, right? He's obviously from Shevet Yehuda. So besides the fact that he has to be Tahor, in order for him to halachically eat the bread, he has to be a Kohen. So if the bread here is Lechem HaPanim, then Achimelech's hesitation from purity is very difficult to understand. So the Radak actually quotes his father, who's also a major Mefarish, who suggests that actually the bread here is lachme toda, is toda bread. When someone has a long story, what exactly, but miracle or some salvation take place. So you bring a carbon shlamim, it's called the carbon toda, right? And it comes along with 40 loaves of bread, which is an immense amount. It's like, it's 20 esronos, which is enough for 20 people to eat for a whole day. You only have one day to eat it. Mepharshim explain, you want to have many, many, many people come to your feast to celebrate the divine salvation. So that bread can be eaten by a non-Kohen. That's the Radak's father's suggestion, that this is the bread of a Toda. So the only problem is you have to be Tahor, because this is part of a carbon, but you do not need to be a Kohen. That's his suggestion. There's some irony to it, right? That David, at his moment of total crisis, right, where he's on the run because the king wants him dead. He has no food. He has no people. There's no clear hope. Imagine that he's going to be eating lachme toda at that point is fascinating. Keep that in mind at the end of the parak when we see Sefer Tehillim give us a window into David's own mindset during this whole experience. But so that's the suggestion of Radak's father. Most of the Mepharshim, including Radak himself, happens to be elsewhere, do not go in this direction because Pasuk Zion really makes it seem like it's the Lechem Hapanim. I mean, the Navi called it Lechem Hapanim. They're there before Hashem, and you have like the day it was taken away. This sounds like the weekly Lechem Hapanim. So what's going on? So Rashi explains that it's not so bad. It's not so bad because since the bread has already been on the Shulchan for a week, so you don't have to worry about stealing the bread from Hashem. It's not Me'ila. You're not taking Hashem's stuff. Karav Hulios Chulin. It's almost Chulin. Sheyatza Mide Me'ila, because it's been on the Shulchan for the week. Right now it's coming off. So the only problem you have is that David is a Yisrael, not a Kohen. Okay, so why is Achimelech willing to give David the bread? Probably because he's starving. Well, it's really interesting, and this highlights maybe a problem with Achimelech. Look at Rashi's next comment. Rashi talking about when the Kohen Gadol says, "Have to make sure you're tahor." So Rashi says, "Here's what the Kohen Gadol's view was: Bekoshi ani ma'achilan lezare. It's hard enough for me, the Kohen Gadol, to feed lachem hapanim to a non-Kohen. I'm not going to go that far, okay? Giving it to a non-Kohen, that's hard for me. Giving it to someone who's Tameh, that's unacceptable. Now, the problem is that why halachically was the Kohen Gadol allowed to give David the bread in the first place? Why did David ask for the Lechem Kodesh? Because he's starving. It's a case of Pikuach Nefesh. Mari Kras says this in source number 7. There's no halachic problem here whatsoever. David's been out in the field for 3 days. He hasn't eaten food, so he needs whatever you can give him. Pikuach nefesh obviously overrides the aveira of eating bread that's supposed to go to a Kohen. That's why the Kohen Gadol knows, that's why he's able to give it to him. But it also overrides the prohibition of Tumah V'Tahara. The Kohen Gadol seems to have a problematic perspective on the world of Ben Adam L'Chavero and the world of Ben Adam L'Makom. He should be immediately giving Lechem Hapanim to David, just as David is asking for it. But we see that he is assigning too much weight to other factors, to internal Mishkan factors. I can't believe I have to give Lechem Hapanim to this non-Kohen. Give it to him. The Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos says, when we need to violate Shabbos to save a life, he says, we don't go to the people who are the Amaratzim. We go to the biggest Talmud Chacham in town. He's the one who has to publicly violate the Shabbos because we have to show that for Pikuach Nefesh, we just override everything. You do it. You give him the Lechem Hapanim if you have to. And if he's Tameh, it doesn't matter. But the Kohen Gadol does not seem to have that perspective. He does not value Pikuach Nefesh the way that he should. Now, there's another point as well here, which seems to show that the old problems of the house of Eli, right, which remember, they were all into karbanos, and they thought of the Mishkan as a quid pro quo. We give Hashem karbanos, we get privileges in response. There was a fundamental lack of respect for the people who were coming. Sounds like, even if you don't go as far as the Radak from the beginning of the Shir, that they're like secret, severe averos that the Kohanim have, we can sense that a lot of the basic problematic ethos of the Kohanim is still here. The Radak asks another great question. Okay, the second great question the Radak asks today. It says, Nov is a whole city. So even if there was no chulin bread in the Mishkan, why couldn't Achimelech go next door? Right? It wasn't one loaf of regular bread in the city. Achimelech just couldn't go to the neighbor, get a loaf of bread, give it to him, send him on his way. Very, very difficult. So, okay, you understand why David does want to go. Because David, there's political sensitivity here. And David himself, if David goes up and down the streets of Nov asking for bread, that's going to create problems. Right? And David's whole cover, this is a super secret mission. You can only tell the Kohen Gadol, dicey. So he says, Achimelech should go. He says, so another shows up at your door and says, I need bread to give to someone. Are you going to say, why? Are you going to, someone comes asking for money, so you ask the Kohen Gadol to show you the Tudah, to tell you, can you verify, please, that this is an acceptable cause? It's a Kohen Gadol, okay? And it's the city of Kohanim. Yes, sir, you give him the bread. What's going on here? Why does he have to give David lechem upon him? Just get regular bread from one of the neighbors. Radak has an answer. Unfortunately, I don't think the answer is as great as the question. See why. Radak suggests, he says, the city was the city of Kohanim. So he says, there was no chulin in the whole city, right? They were Kohanim. What a Kohanim eat? They eat truma. So all the food they had in the whole city was actually food that could only be by Kohanim. Because the whole city was Kohanim. So all they had was truma. It's a difficult answer, though, because even Kohanim invariably become Tameh. That's just part of life. The women are going to become Nidas, right? So they have to have food available. There's going to be a Sheretz who's going to, touch you as you're walking down the street. People come Tameh all the time. That's why we go to Israel, we know how many mikvos are there that the archaeologists have dug up. And it's like 0.1% of the mikvos all over the country. Becoming Tameh and then becoming Tahor was routine. And then once you become Tameh from like light forms of Tuma, so Allah, as you go to the mikvah, you have to wait till nightfall, right? That's the first mission of Brachos is the Kohanim who are waiting until nightfall so that they could begin eating their Truma because they were Tameh during the day. This happens all the time. So it's very difficult to imagine that even a city that is entirely a city of Kohanim has no food other than Truma because just life can't work that way. So then we need to go back to the Radak's question and ask, why can't Achimelech go to the neighbors and just get another loaf of bread? So Mari Krah gives one answer. It's here in source number 7. He says, it was just mamish a code red. Okay, he needed food. He needed food immediately. And so the only thing he had literally on hand was lechem apanim. There's a medrash about a similar medrash about someone, I think one of the Tanoim, who sees someone who's poor, who asks for food, and he says, sure, just give me a few minutes to unpack my stuff. And then in the interim, the ani drops dead of starvation. So maybe this is one of those cases where David's hunger is so dire that we can't wait half an hour for him to go to the neighbors and come back. He needs to give him food immediately. Could be. But also, and maybe more likely, we can suggest that going back to the Radak's question, would the people ask what's going on if Achimelech asks them for a loaf of bread? Let's ask the following question. Would we like to imagine Mishkan as a place where someone who needed food could go to find help? The answer would be yes. Right? Someone walks into shul, now shul's back now, someone walks into shul starving, he'll get help. How the Chomer we would like to imagine that if someone was starving to death, they could go to the Mishkan, they'd find people to help them. And that this would happen fairly often, right? Kohen Gadol, one of the Kohanim, comes to someone in town and say, hey, we have an Ani, he's come to the Mishkan, he's starving, he needs help, can you give him some food? Can you give him $10? The answer would be, sure. Is he going to ask, why are you coming to me? No, because he came to me last week and he'll come to me next week. That's life, and you live in the city of the Mishkan. the fact that apparently, Achimelech people would have been asking, why is Achimelech asking me for food, indicates that that was not the normal course of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol was not going around getting food for people. Mishkan was not a place of chesed. This is the second time then that we've seen a Mishkan where people are not getting what they really need from the Kohanim. Chana goes to the Mishkan looking for solace and emotional support and comfort. Mishkan's not the place to go for comfort, right? What does she get instead? She got Eli yelling at her, why are you drunk? And she wasn't drunk. David goes to the Mishkan, he needs food. Mishkan doesn't seem to be a place for chesed, doesn't seem to be a place for routine tzedakah, where food is readily available for the poor. So that it's such an emergency that they have to justify giving him lacham apanim. And when he gives him lacham apanim, Rashi pointed out, he wasn't happy to do so. His pikuach nefesh values were out of whack. He's like, with difficulty, bekoshi, giving it to a non-kohen and refusing to give it to someone who is tame. So putting some of this together, we see between Achimelech's trembling, he realizes that this is a suspicious scenario, and the Nevi is going to make that clear going forward. And the fact that the to some degree, the Radak clearly is right. The house of Eli has not completely overhauled. This has not turned into Aaron HaKohen's Mishkan of the Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, love for the fellow Jew, tzedakah, chesed, pikuach nefesh. We may not have the depredations of Chafni and Pinchas we had back at the beginning of the Sefer, but the Kohanim in this Mishkan are still not where they need to be. Had they been, David could have had a different experience. So that's one piece to put there, right? There's some funny stuff with the Kohanim. Chazal have another point of criticism, which the Radak quotes at the end. There's a Gemara, which in Sanhedrin, which talks about how important food is in a number of different areas. And one is that Yohanan really blew it. Very interesting to think about that. Gemara says, if Yohanan had given David two pieces of bread, right? Elmali helveo Yohanan the David, shtei karas lachem, if he had given David two loaves of bread, lo neregu ko no vir konim, lo nitrag dog hadomi, lo nereg shalosh shoshes banav. If Yohanan had been a little thoughtful and given David some bread, right, last week they were at an emotional high and it was a crisis and they're thinking of their future and the bris and the descendants. But for all those grand plans and emotions, if chesed was fully inculcated, you'd have a minute to think of the present. So that's second point Chazal points out, right? Another way to spread some of the blame. Let's go forward. See three more psukim about the what's happening at Nov, and then we'll go to the end of the parak. Asachas tells us that there was someone there, one of Avdei Shaul, who's Doeg HaEdomi. Actually from Edom, probably not. Mefarshim mostly say that he lived near Edom. As we'll see, this is definitely a dark portent because Doeg is going to behave exactly like Edom. He's going to behave exactly like a murderous Esav. He's the Abir Haroim, right? Well, that's the head of the herdsmen. So that would be, he's a royal official, right? It also might be, as Mefreshim suggests, like the head of the advisors, Abir Haroim, like the shepherds, meaning those who advise Shaul. So the head of the advisors, Chazal say that he's the head of the Sanhedrin, actually. Very, very bright. Though it clearly is brilliant. So he sees what's happening. Right? The Navi just drops that for us. For us to come back to next week. It's not going to go well. So what is David's Achimelech? So after he demanded food, look at what he says. Again, he doesn't ask nicely. He like demands. So David is showing up and he's putting on the persona of the Sayeret Makal commander in the middle of a secret mission. Right? I don't have time for fun and games. I just need to tell you what I need to do. Bein yesh po tachas yalchach haniso charev. Is there any sword or spear that's over here? I didn't take any of my weapons. It was such an emergency business. Right? There's no like, imna bivakashad, please, maybe. Like, hey, do you have any weapons? Right? Now, I mean, by this point, you can imagine how suspicious Achimelech should be. right? You got David who's coming on the run. He's been on the field for 3 days. So it's not like his clothes are like fresh from the dry cleaners, right? The man's probably a mess. He's hungry. He's dirty. He's alone. He's looking stressed. He has no men with him. He has no weapons with him. He's going on a super secret military mission with no weapons. Really? I mean, David sells it, Achimelech buys it. But from the perspective of Shaul, it is extremely easy to imagine this being a load of baloney, right? One possibility. Innocent Kohen Gadol, assumed, oh yeah, David's telling the truth. He has, he shows up on a secret mission with no food, no weapons, no army. Other possibility, you helped David knowing that he was a wanted man. Shaul is going to go with option number two, but there are good, we can see why he would think that way. And it's going to get even worse, because what does the Kohen Gadol say to David? I mean, he didn't show up to the armory, he showed up to the Mishkan. What weapons are in the Mishkan? So the Kohen says, and again, look at his tone, right? Look how long he talks for. Cherev Goliath HaPlishti, there's the sword of Goliath. Asher Akisa Be'emek Ha'ela, that you slayed him in the Valley of Ela. Hine hi luta basimla achare ha'ephod. We have it here wrapped up behind the ephod. Imosa tikach lechaka. If you need it, so take it. Kiena charas zulasa bazad. It's the only spear we've got. No, he gives like the whole biography of the spear, what it's doing here. Yeah, take it if you need it. I don't have any other. You can sense he's not, Achimelech is not comfortable. What does David say? Boom, boom. In kamua tenenali. Don't like it? It's a great sword. Give it to me. Now, David doing that is insane. It is insane. Can you imagine the symbolism of David taking the sword of Goliath from the moment when he replaced Shaul and fought Goliath and killed him? There is no more politically potent symbol in the entire country than Goliath's sword to symbolize that Shaul should no longer be king and David should take over. And David says, sure, give me that sword. Chazal are fully aware of this. Chazal, Gemara, and Sanhedrin talk about this funny parak at the end of Shmuel Beis. One of the giants who we meet in the Shmuel Beis, Yishbi Benov, right? Which the Gemara asks, what is that? He is Yishbi Benov. So Gemara explains, he came because of Nov. Amalek Hashbarach LeDavid, Ad Masa Yia Avon Zet Tamu Biyadcha, Al Yadcha Nerga Nov Yerakonim. Right, earlier we had Chazal blaming Yehonasan for not giving David food. Now, Gemara says, we blame David. Your behavior here, showing up to the Mishkan, asking, demanding food, and then taking Goliath's sword caused the death of Novi Arkonim. Val Yadcha Netra Doge Adomi, you gave him the fodder for what he did. Val Yadcha Nergu Shalosh Shloshes Banim. And by the way, David's fully aware this was a mistake, because David's going to say one barak later, he's going to talk to the one survivor of the Kohanim, he's going to say, I saw Doeg, and I am responsible. Anochi Sabosi B'chol Nefesh Beis Avicha. I am responsible for the death of your whole household. David doing this is insane, and he realized it after the fact, but you put it all together and we can understand why Shaul thought that there was a rebellion here. So setting up for next week, when Shaul is going to lash out the way he does, we see a priesthood, we see a kahuna, which the decay of Eli is still there, maybe not as blatant, but there still are severe problems. And the optics really do look much more like aiding and abetting a conspiracy and helping a fugitive than they do just an innocent chesed by a well-meaning Kohen Gadol. Okay, just take a couple of minutes to close out the perek. So apparently David then leaves, realizes, you know, maybe Eretz Yisrael is too hot to hold him. So where does he go? He does what many fugitives do. He goes to the country next door. El Achish Melech Gas. Right? Now Gas, remember, it was actually where Goliath was from. Now, the hope that David presumably had was the Plishtim would take in the person applying for asylum from their enemy. And it'll be in their interest. This is going to happen in Shmuel Bey's. The Plishtim in Shmuel Bey's beginning will be very happy to have a civil war between Beis Shaul and Beis David, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So David could be accepted as the enemy of Shaul, which means he could be the friend of the Plishtim. And now it doesn't work that way, and David realizes that very quickly. Pasuk Bey's, you know, David shows up, and the people say, hello, Zed David, Melech Haaretz. Fascinating. What do they call David? They call David the king. They call David Melech Haaretz. Whether that's because they sensed that he was going to be the king, or because they just treated him as the king. He was their primary enemy. He's the one who's been fighting them in so many battles, but they call him a Melech, right? Which again, Shaul is not crazy for thinking that David wants to replace him. The Plishtim are calling David a Melech. Alozah, Yanu, Mecholos, Limor, Hika, Shabalafa, V'David, Birvosav. Remember the song? The song that the women would sing when David came back from battle. The Plishtim know the song, right? So David realizes that he is not the enemy of the enemy of the Plishtim, because the Plishtim do not think of Shaul anymore as their primary enemy. They think of David as their primary enemy. And so David realizes that he needs to call an audible. Yirim ha'od. V'yashanu astamo b'ineim v'yisholel b'yadam v'yasav adlosos ashar v'yored rira al zikano. So what does he do? He's reduced to imitating a madman. He's drooling and grabbing the door. Whether this saves him, obviously Hashkacha saves him. Whether David's hope here was that they would have mercy on him is just, oh, David's gone crazy. Or maybe more likely, that can't be David, right? This is a raving lunatic. And sure enough, it works. Achish says to his court, and then Achish has a great line. I don't have enough crazy people around that you bring me another one. Rashi quotes a midrash that Achish's own family was stricken with insanity. I have enough. I have enough Meshugaim. I don't need another one. And David is saying. The important thing to just take out of here. First of all, there's a similarity in the two cases where we see David can act when he needs to. He can act the confident general when he's on the run. He can act the madman when he needs to. The pain that David has to go through, right? Like, it's not an easy road. And then what's amazing is we know what is going through David's head as this happens. We know that because David gives us a parak of Tehillim, which we read every Shabbos morning. The David b'shanos ta'astamo l'fnevi melech b'ager sheva le'i b'yilach. Why is he Avimelech instead of Achish? Well, the Parshim say Avimelech was the generic term for a Plishti king. So like you would have Paro Nicho, you'd have Paro Chofra in the Nevi'im, but they're all Paro. So Achish was the Avimelech whose name was Achish. And then we just look at the Parak and we see the mind-blowing bitachon that David Melech is able to have, which is his defining characteristic. He's alone. He's starving. He's chased. He's wanted. The Jewish government hates him. The Plishti government hates him. He has nowhere to go. What's his response? Avarcha es Hashem b'chol eis, tamid tila sabafi, b'Hashem tishalel nafshmi, yishmu anavim yismachu, gadol Hashem iti. Total confidence in Ribono Shel Olam. Total faith. Darashti es Hashem v'anani mikol megurasai tzilani. I sought Hashem. Hashem delivered me. What deliverance? He's alone and on the run. Dab is able to say, Darashti es Hashem v'anani mikol megurasai tzilani. On and on and on. Ze ani kara v'Hashem shameh mikol tzav hoshiyo. Who's David talking about? Not the poor guy on the street. He's talking about himself. In the moment, before Hashem even answers, David is able to sense, as David's defining characteristic, he can sense that Hashem is with him. And maybe we'll close with this. There's a fascinating contrast that the Navi kind of draws here between David and Shaul. Why is that? Because we have David imitating the madman. Of course, Shaul is the one who until now has the one who's been plagued with the Ruach Ra. Right? Shaul is the one who's been plagued with the evil spirit. And what defines the two of them, right, the real opposite characteristic that Shaul has and David has, is that what is killing Shaul, we've seen so many times, is the core awareness that the Ribono Shel Olam is no longer with him. The tragedy of Shaul is that he doesn't realize that he can change that. He doesn't realize that Tshuva can turn that around. He can bring Hashem back. He senses, though, Hashem is not with me, and it's that core crisis that leads to so much disaster for Shaul. And with David HaMelech, it's the exact opposite. Even in the darkest and worst of moments, when any onlooker would have thought there's no help, there's no hope, there's nothing, he's alone, he's got nothing going on, God was able to sense, I have one thing for me, and that is that I have the Ribono Shel Olam with me. And that is what gives him the strength to survive the moment over here, and that's going to have him survive going forward. So, okay, that's all I